brought to you by Burr and Foreman, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be. Now, here are your hosts, Elizabeth Gordon and Lee Cantor.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Elizabeth Gordon. Thanks for tuning in to Results Matter Radio. I've got Dana Barrett with me today producing the show, and we've got a terrific discussion coming up for you all on sustainability and what the City of Atlanta and prominent companies in the City of Atlanta are doing around sustainability. My panel today includes Aaron Bastain, who is the Communications and Project Manager for the City of Atlanta Mayor's Office of Sustainability. Aaron, welcome.
Good morning.
Glad
Thank
to
you.
Have you here. We've also got Tom Beck, who is the Principal at Sustainable Options. Tom oversees the company's entire consulting practice at Sustainable Options, and they provide sustainable consulting program and construction management services to clients seeking healthy and efficient buildings. Tom, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Glad to have you here. We've also got Erin Emmerich with us on the panel. Erin is with Footprint Talent. She's the managing director there at Footprint Talent, a boutique executive recruiting and talent consulting firm focused on serving mission-driven companies and nonprofit organizations nationally. Erin, good morning to you.
Thanks for having me.
And we've got Susie Spivey-Tillison with us as well. Susie's with TVS Design. And TVS Design, Susie is a lead accredited professional, ISO 14001 internal auditor, and is certified in the Home Energy Rating System and a certified permaculture designer. Did I get that right, Susie?
Yes.
Permaculture design. All right. So as you can see, we've got a bunch of very smart people with us this morning. I'm going to start with Aaron, with the mayor's office, Aaron Bastain, to get us started in this conversation this morning. Let's talk about how Atlanta is participating in the Better Buildings Challenge. And really, what is the Atlanta Better Buildings Challenge, Aaron?
Sure. I'd say about a year ago, we kicked off November of 2011, and there's some pretty simple goals, one being to make commercial buildings in downtown Atlanta, across Atlanta, 20% more energy efficient by the year 2020. It's a challenge set forth by the White House and the U.S. Department of Energy. Atlanta, Los Angeles, and Seattle were chosen as three pilot cities back last year, and since then we've led the way. Really simple, if you think about it in terms of the number of, or percentage rather, of energy usage across this country, commercial buildings use 60% of that nationally. And so if we can have an impact there in reducing energy consumption, water consumption, we feel like we're really doing, are making a huge impact in helping Atlanta become a more sustainable city.
Now, Aaron, you were part of the team that implemented the city's first sustainability plan launched back in October of 2010. What are some of the goals around the program, and how are you all tracking to see that you're meeting those metrics?
Our first plan, Power to Change, was, as you said, introduced in October 2010. We'll actually be coming out with a refresh of that plan this month. It'll be almost 2 years there. But some of the goals are really, really simple. For air quality, we want to reduce the number of, as you know, as red, hazardous days for indoor and outdoor air quality. We want to conserve the amount of water that we're using as a city, or reduce that consumption 20% by the year 2020. For land use, we want residents to have access to local and healthy food and create neighborhoods that are both accessible to jobs and entertainment. Beyond that, there are a number of goals. 10 for the new plan. We started with 8. And just some achievements within that space that we're really proud of. We were once ranked 38th. by a nonprofit known as Sustain Lane in terms of our overall sustainability. And in a short 2-year period, we moved to 19th, which we think is a significant achievement. That's where we were back in 2010. And so the future looks bright. I think with the refresh of the plan, we can look forward to engaging taxpayers and businesses, including academia and industry, in a more robust fashion than we did before. And so, yeah, it's programs like this that will give us a platform to talk about it, but to also engage people along the way.
Who are some of the organizations that have been involved in executing this project and notable participants?
Sure. In terms of the Atlanta Better Buildings Challenge, the city strategically partnered with Central Atlanta Progress, the Downtown Development Authority, to deploy this program. A.J. Robinson, Lauren DeFort, Wilma Southern, the staff there have been amazing to work with, and we honestly could not have deployed this program without their help. What you'll find is that Central Atlanta Progress has great business relationships in the downtown district, which is where we started the Better Buildings Challenge. For the first year, we made significant progress, and what we want to do is replicate that in other business districts across the city, including Midtown and Buckhead, where a large majority of our commercial buildings lie in this city. Beyond that, Georgia Power, Atlanta Gaslight, South Face Energy Institute, a nonprofit here near the Atlanta Civic Center, and even Southern Polytechnic State University have all been great partners to us that have provided their technical expertise, including manpower, to help assess some of the problems that exist in these commercial buildings that have taken the challenge. And so it's been an all-hands-on effort that both the mayor and all those involved have really been proud of, including the folks at DOE in D.C. They really look to Atlanta as a model city for how they can share best practices with others.
Why is it so important to the mayor and the participating organizations to help make Atlanta a more sustainable city? And how is the Better Buildings Challenge going to help do that?
Sure. I think for the mayor, and I think for even the regular taxpayer, regular industry professional, academic, people want to save money, and economies and business development and growth, whether it be in a small sector, private sector, we all want the city to flourish, and sustainability very simply allows you to do that. It's not just saving the environment. Economies are huge, and we know Atlanta has a thriving economy. We feel like people across those groups, if they were able to implement sustainability practices, many of which people might assume are very cost intensive, but saving energy and saving water really deals with behavior change. We feel like if people could adopt those practices and we have a concerted effort, that we really can help not only impact the city's ranking in terms of sustainability, but help folks to make better business sense and environmental sense in their daily practices and in their businesses.
Fantastic. Tom, I want to bring you into the conversation here. Sustainable Options has been a leader in enhancing real estate value of commercial property through sustainability. Everybody talks about the cost of going green. How much does going green or being a sustainable building really cost?
Well, you know, one of the things that we look at when we assess costs of sustainability, when we're looking at it from, there are two perspectives to take, and one of those perspectives is the new construction side, and then the other one is the existing building side. From the new construction side, essentially what we do is we look at what our budget is. What are you planning on spending on the building? And then you build it as green as you can with the budget you have. Our intention never is to increase the cost of a project by making it green. It is to make it as green as possible with the money that we have to spend. And having come out of the development world myself, commercial office development, I had worked for a company that was actually a merchant developer. And they're one of the main keys of what they do is to turn buildings over quickly and lease them up and make profit on them. So we had very tight budgets on projects that we did, and we did a pilot up in Gwinnett County where Georgia State or where UGA currently has an extension off of I-85. That was the IntelliCenter project, and that was one of eight buildings we did across the country that were identical. We were part of the Core and Shell pilot program at that point. We had a budget. They gave us our budget. We spent not $1 more than what that budget was. But now on the other side, you've got the existing building side. And from an existing building standpoint, again, Aaron had mentioned something about changing behavior. Well, that's really the key on existing buildings, is getting people to change their behavior. What we're doing is we're actually looking at facilities departments, and we're asking them to look at the way that they do things, the policies that they implement, and helping them to actually elevate their game, so to speak, and to move into a value enhancement process where they are using a best practices model. And in that best practices model, they're getting much more efficient with how they manage and operate their facilities. We don't have them change out equipment until it reaches life cycle. So we work with them in their capital budgets and their facilities budgets and help them in their five-year planning process so that when they're looking at changing out various pieces of equipment, whether it's a lighting retrofit or it's a something much more heavy duty about an HVAC system, we're actually helping them to choose the right equipment for the right application and to install it at the right time so that they're not wasting money, but rather they're using their money most wisely.
Now, speaking of time, currently it's still a down real estate market that we're in, I hear. Where can sustainability help in that regard?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. You know, one of the things that we look at in the marketplace as we are today, especially in Atlanta, we have a high vacancy and low occupancy at this point in the market, and we're seeing some movement in that area, and hopefully it will improve greatly as we move forward. But right now, in order to compete in the marketplace, sustainability becomes really key. Because folks who are doing things sustainably in their properties and getting LEED certification on their properties, doing ENERGY STAR improvements to their buildings, they're actually able to compete better in the marketplace. And they're actually providing a better product for their tenants in which to operate. And when their tenants go out and they shop the market and they look at what they're doing and what buildings they're looking at, what facilities are available, what you'll find generally is that those buildings that are operating sustainably are generally better properties. They have cleaner indoor air quality. They run more efficiently. And there's more bang for the buck in the tenants' costs of what they're spending on lease and operating expenses. Those buildings do operate better, and very often they lease out for the same as what a property that is not green will lease out for.
Hmm. Now, I saw something on your website about the BEPA reports. What is BEPA, and how is it used?
That's one of those acronyms that we call it BEPA. And BEPA is a standard that just came out a year ago last February, and it is specifically designed for a due diligence process. It is a building energy performance assessment. BEPA is used for generally for developers or investors when they're going and looking at property to buy, and they want to see how efficient that is. And then they want to use a standard that will determine for them how that building operates. It's almost like a nutritional label on a cereal box, for instance. So when we use a BEPA report, we're able to see what the carbon footprint of that property is. We're able to see what its energy efficiency is, what its water efficiency is, and how it stands compared to the region. And also BEPA is used in existing buildings. Once a BEPA report is implemented, the BEPA system can be used as on an ongoing basis to help with the ENERGY STAR implementation and with maintaining ENERGY STAR on a property. It helps in tracking because it keeps all these data points on energy and water consumption as well as carbon footprint. And all those areas, it was actually designed to meet the criteria for what were assumed to be the metrics that will ultimately be governmental reporting. So the BEPA report was designed to meet those criteria that are anticipated. So right now, today, people can use a BEPA report and they can manage their property and its efficiency based on that information.
Now, you sometimes hear people say that they understand the value of going green, but they can do it without spending the money to certify. What would you say to that?
Well, I'm a little biased. I'm a consultant who gets paid to help people get there. So I'll put that out on the table right away. However, one of the things that I would say is if you're not willing to let someone else know that, in fact, you've done what you said you were going to do, how do people around you know that you've actually done it? So the idea of using a third-party certification like Green Globes or like LEED, or even putting an Energy Star implementation on a property, allows others to know that, in fact, you have kept your promise. You have actually done what you said you were going to do. So there is some value in that, and I think when you're leasing office space, there's certainly more value there than there might be in another circumstance.
Now, as you said, Sustainable Options does LEED certification of new and existing buildings. How can large institutional owners implement the certification initiatives more quickly? And can they have more than one building certified at a time?
Yes, the challenge that large institutional owners have is that they have large portfolios of buildings. Very often they're office buildings, they're multi-tenant type scenarios across the country. They could be around the world even. They also have various mixes of properties. They could have industrial property. They could have multifamily property. So they have challenges in being able to assess those portfolios and to be able to then decide what they're going to do with those portfolios to implement green. One of the things that has been developed and that is on the market today is, in fact, the LEED Volume Certification Program. And we were involved in the pilot committee to help that get developed initially a few years ago. And the idea there is to set up criteria for all of your properties to implement, and then go in and modify the implementation for the specific needs of specific properties. So you're going in with a generalized criteria across the board, and then you're coming in on each property to see where they fall within the spectrum and putting them in those areas and then working towards those goals. And you're helping the portfolio to implement policies and procedures across the board, universally. It does a couple of things. It helps people maintain standards, and in maintaining standards, we know that we can manage costs a little bit better because everybody does things the same way. It also allows for, in a private sector situation, it actually allows for some branding. If you know that you're buying property from a particular investor, you know that that property is always going to have certain features and benefits, and you can be assured of that as they go through this volume certification program. The volume certification program allows you to take bunches of buildings. You can take 25 buildings at a time, and then you actually get discounts on your certification fees for each batch of 25 over that, so that it can really become very cost effective. In fact, in some instances, it can be almost half of what a single building certification is to implement. So it really is a great opportunity for them to get a larger spectrum of their properties implemented and to do it in a fashion that helps them to maintain uniformity across their portfolio and add value to their investors.
Tom, the requirements on some of these certifications are very stringent. What if a company wants to make their facility more green, but they're uncertain of whether or not they can meet the requirements?
You know, a lot of times we're talking about this group of folks being kind of the opposite of those institutional owners. This is maybe the individual who owns a single office building or someone who has a smaller property, and they're really not sure what to do. One of the things that we do for them is that we work with them on their priorities. We help them to determine what their property's asset is, what its criteria are, how it operates currently, and then help them to tweak the operation and guide them through a process whereby they can take it and over a period of time implement sustainable changes that will help them save money and operate their building more efficiently.
Great. Aaron, I would like to bring you into the conversation now. How long has Footprint Talent been in business, and what was your vision for starting such a specialized recruiting practice?
Footprint as such has been in business almost 3 years, and I was a partner in another executive search firm here in Atlanta working nationally in more of a generalist capacity for several years before that. And we began to see an increasing and burgeoning need in the sustainability recruiting space, early and new as it was at the time. We were starting to get more and more calls as partners of this other firm saying, you guys must know how to recruit these green people, these sustainability people, and what do they look like, and how do they talk, and what kinds of talents and pedigree do they bring to the table? And so I had a vision to step out of my other firm in a very amicable way, mind you, and start Footprint Talent. And so we've been in business about 3 years and are still very much in growth mode, but it's been a fun ride for sure.
So as you said, sustainability, it's still a relatively new buzzword. Mm-hmm. What types of people do you work with, and what types of work activities do sustainable leaders do? What are they doing?
a variety of things. I think my colleagues here at this table would probably support that statement. Sustainability leaders are doing all manner of work, but we typically are retained by large companies, Fortune 100 sized companies, and large nonprofits to go out and recruit either chief sustainability officer sort of level leaders who are the strategist and the designer and leader of a sustainability department, which is typically very small, by the way. Or we're increasingly being called upon to find very, very technical folks working in their various sub-competencies around sustainability. Could be waste management, could be greenhouse accounting, carbon management. Those folks are harder and harder to find, especially the really, really obscure sort of technical work. But I think that's the biggest change that we've seen probably in the last 18 months, is a real shift towards more technical need in talent.
So how's the job market, both in general as well as for companies that are really starting to hire more people in the sustainability, with sustainability expertise?
That's the million-dollar question, right? I laugh. That's the one question at cocktail parties and networking events that people want to pull me aside and say, Erin, you know, how is the job market? And I can only say from our perspective that in the last 3 years here in Atlanta, specifically in the clients that we work with here, Georgia Pacific, Intercontinental Hotels Group, some of the Cokes of the world that you find here in Atlanta, I'm encouraged by the growth and the evolution of how we're looking at sustainability leadership and what we're calling on those folks to do. So I can say in general, I think it's an upswing nationally where we also do work. I think that it's also positive. You certainly see pockets in other markets, the Bay Area and Seattle, and increasingly in Chicago and Austin, Texas, certainly up and down the East Coast, that perhaps are a little bit ahead of us in terms of critical mass of these kinds of jobs. But I think we're catching up quickly.
Excellent. Susie, TVS Design is a major player in green building across the globe. What is the company's stance on sustainability and greening the built environment?
Well, quite simply, good design is green design. TVS is an architecture and interior design and land planning firm, and we've been in business for quite a long time. A lot of folks will probably know us as Thompson Vinchelet Steinbeck & Associates. So we've done a little branding over the years. And part of that branding is obviously to manifest sustainability on all of our projects in a way that's forthright and outspoken. We do a lot of work in the convention center market and the office building market. And we're on that new construction side, whereas Tom and Erin talked a lot about more of the existing buildings, which are the greater majority of the stock of buildings in the world. But we're not stopping building new buildings. And so TVS is proud to use the LEED rating system as a certification tool on at least half of the projects that we're working on right now globally, but also as sort of a guideline, and it gives language to folks who don't know anything about sustainability, and it allows us to sort of use it as a measuring stick and a guideline on all of our project work.
So the upcoming LEED version 4, what are some of the big or more controversial changes coming up?
I would. Tom, it's funny. Tom just rolled his eyes at me, and I'm really interested to hear what he might have to say about.
Yeah,
this
and feel
as
free
well.
To chime in here, Tom.
I have no
you
opinion.
Both have a...
He's pleading the fifth. It sounds like. In a word, materials. I think that the biggest pushback from the marketplace has been and will be the changes to the materials credit. We're going through an unprecedented fifth comment period, public comment period for the rating system, and I think what that says is that we're still not quite happy with where it's landing. Everybody wants the evolution of the rating system to be meaningful and to have an impact in the marketplace and to drive changes in the marketplace. And sometimes we make changes that are maybe too much too soon, and the chemicals of concern and the red lists and the idea of reporting what the ingredients are in materials is scary for the people who are manufacturing materials, and there's a big learning curve, I think, for the contractors and the subcontractors and the consultants like myself and Tom who are going to be trying to document these things and implement them on projects so that we create healthy spaces for people to work and play in. And the market doesn't know what to do yet. And so the U.S. Green Building Council responded accordingly, I think, and postponed the balloting of the rating system until 2013. And that's going to give them time to further refine the rating system to a place that the market is really comfortable with it.
Okay. What are some of the barriers to innovation in green building?
Susan Sanazi was just in our office and made an incredible presentation about some of these small, super creative millennials out in the world doing amazing things with sustainability, right? And it was a beautiful film to watch because they're so uninhibited by the idea that they may be sued.
Right. Ah, the young.
And
they haven't met the lawyers yet.
You know, I think that especially once you're in your field and you've been doing it for a long time, we, as much as we like to think we're thinking outside of the box, we're sort of living in a bigger box that we're a little unaware of, and it's called liability.
and that's an important side to also have in mind. Now, the FCS wood, I wanted to ask you about that. Does specifying FCS wood really hurt forestry practices in Georgia?
Well, just to clarify, it's FSC.
Oh, sorry.
Wood. I may have totally messed you up on that, but it's FSC wood, which is the forest.
I'm getting my acronyms all mixed up this morning.
there's been some recent advocacy around wood. There's been a long-lived wood debate around the nation, around internationally really, but particularly in Georgia. And FSC wood is, I think, recognized by the LEED rating system specifically as the more... Tom, what's the word I'm looking for? The more stringent.
I would say it's the more stringent process.
Process of you know maintaining biodiversity and forestry practices, and we don't really have any FSC forests in Georgia. It is the only certification system recognized in the LEED rating system as acceptable, and we have other forestry rating systems in Georgia, which is fantastic, but they're. You know, in my world, with sustainability in mind, they're not competing practices. SFI is the other practice that's largely here in Georgia, but they're not competing. Number one, if a project's going for LEED certification, there's only one credit associated with the wood credit. If they're a state-funded project and they're doing the Georgia Peach system, then they're heavily rewarded for using Georgia-based products. And so those two things actually go hand in hand. You can elect not to go for the FSC credit and still buy Georgia-based SFI wood. So they're not necessarily conflicting, and I think there's some misinformation out there about what the impacts are of using FSC wood.
Thanks for clearing that up. What about the 2030 challenge? What are the current state of affairs with that?
Well, the 2030 challenge is Ed Masria put out a brilliant idea to the world, and we have this huge challenge ahead of us of as a nation, but internationally, of reducing our carbon footprint around the world. And he put out this really beautiful bite-sized incremental target dates of, you know, how architects and designers and buildings can begin to reduce their carbon footprint and their impact on the environment. And what we're all really learning and what the AIA 2030 report is showing us is that we're making progress, but we're not exactly where we had hoped we would be. And that's all of us. That's the biggest firms, the smallest firms, and everybody around the world who's challenged themselves beyond the 2030 challenge. We are hearing more and more about net zero buildings and buildings that are trying to completely operate off the grid. But it is just that. It is the 2030 challenge. It is the 2035 challenge. It's the 2050 challenge. It's the challenge of our generation.
It's all about looking ahead. Well, we've got a tradition here on the Results Matter show that we're going to circle back around with each of our guests and give them an opportunity to tell us what are the results that really matter to them in their current position, in their role with their organization, and also give us your contact information, website, or where people can go to find out more information about what you all are doing in the world of sustainability. So, Aaron, I'd like to start with you. What are the results that matter over at the mayor's office about sustainability?
Sure. Back in 2010, when we put out the first sustainability plan, he set forth a very aggressive goal for the city of Atlanta to become a top-tier city for sustainability. Back then, we were 19th, and I think anything we can do, along with academia, taxpayers, industry, government, and nonprofits, to move that needle forward towards that goal. Whether you make sixth or first, I think it's the work that we do to get us there that will really prove to be most important. We want folks to know and understand what sustainability really means, and it involves collaboration, just as you've done by bringing us all here today. You know, different hats, but talking all about the same goals, really, the challenges, the green jobs aspect of it, and then the actual on-the-grounds work that Tom is doing with buildings. All helps to move us forward. So for now, two websites I want to mention. The first is atlantaga.gov/sustainability. Anyone can visit there to learn about what we're doing in the office and what we'll soon be doing with the refresh of the sustainability plan. And then for those buildings who are interested in participating in the Atlanta Better Buildings Challenge, that website is simply www.atlantabbc.com. You can learn of all the buildings we have that are currently participating, all of our sponsors, those that are providing technical assistance, in addition to taking the challenge, which we currently have 56 million square feet of building space committed. That's commercial building space, where the original goal back just a year ago was only 2 million square feet. So we're really leading the way and soon to be leading the country with what we've done. So, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Tom?
Give me that question again.
What are the results that matter over at Sustainable Options as you're driving value for your clients and consulting work?
I think the biggest value that we bring to the table is helping people to achieve their goals in sustainability. In fact, very often what we find is that they'll set a goal and we'll be able to achieve a higher level of implementation without additional cost. And helping them to achieve these goals while maintaining their economic base, sustainability isn't just about being green. Sustainability is also maintaining the business sustainability, because if we don't have the jobs and we don't have viable businesses, then none of this matters.
Very important. And the website?
The website is www.sogreenbuildings.com.
Thank you. Over to Aaron Emmerich with Footprint Talent.
This is such a great question, and I think it's one that probably I should ask myself at least weekly, if not morning by morning. But, you know, we're only as good at Footprint Talent as the people that we put in the jobs to do the job within that company. In some ways, I shouldn't say this out loud, but in some ways they're a Trojan horse, you know, and they are going to do the work. They're doing the frontline sort of in the trenches work. And it's up to us to find the best fit for those roles culturally and technically in that given organization. So again, those folks that are furthering the triple bottom line within that organization and in that job is the result that we look for. And how successful are they in that role ongoing. You can find us at footprinttalent.com, footprint talent, all one word, two T's in the middle, and footprint is singular. And organizations that are looking to grow their teams and want some insight on that, we love to sit down and strategize around that. They can reach us at 404-590-6995.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Susie, bring us on home with some results.
Well, at TVS Design, the products we produce are buildings, and each designer sits down to think up the solutions for their building. And what my ultimate goal is to get them to think with a new filter, with a different filter, about the solutions they're bringing to their clients, how they can not only, you know, serve the people who are going to work in that space or live in that space, but how they can do it using less energy, less water, and be a healthier place for them to be. And so, you know, Aaron and Tom both talked about behavioral change, and that's the number one sort of, you know, the pinnacle of how to make all of this happen sustainably. And that's kind of my goal with the designers at TVS, is to educate them in a way that it brings a new filter to their work, a new way of thinking about their designs.
Excellent. Well, this has been wonderful getting to know all of you. We'd love to have you come back on the air and keep us abreast of what all of you are doing in the world of sustainability. I'm Elizabeth Gordon. Thanks for tuning in to Results Matter, brought to you by Burr & Forman. We'll talk to you next week.
This has been a joint production of Burr & Forman and Business Radio X. Burr & Forman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr & Forman a call at 404-685-4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.